This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. RuPaul's Drag Race is one of the top shows on cable today, but drag did not always enjoy this sort of success or acceptance. The term drag dates back to at least 1870, but it remained mostly underground for nearly a century. Now it's much more mainstream. RuPaul's Drag Race has won 4 Emmy Awards. It just started its 10th season with performers of every conceivable style and some styles you have to see to believe. Now drag queens across the country have opportunities to pursue a career. There is space at the top for RuPaul and many more. Joining us from NPR West near Los Angeles is Bianca Del Rio. She is the season 6 winner of RuPaul's Drag Race. She's also a comedian, a TV personality, and the author of the new book, Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, the expert on nothing with an opinion on everything. Bianca, welcome to 1A.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Joining us from WABE Public Radio in Atlanta is Brigitte Bidet, a drag queen and the hostess of the drag show Tossed Salad. Outside of their work in drag, they are a professional dancer. Brigitte, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And here with us in studio is Lena Lett, a drag hostess for more than 10 years of weekly shows at Town Dance Boutique, a club here in Washington. Outside of drag, they work as a priest. Lena, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Cannot wait to talk more about that as we go on. Actually, I can't wait for this conversation. I think it's especially important because a lot of us have only fleeting encounters or cultural connections to drag queens. I think this will sound very familiar to a lot of us.
Darling, if you're going to become a drag queen, you're going to have to learn these things.
What do you mean, be a drag queen? I am a drag queen.
Oh, child, no. You are simply put a boy in a dress. When a straight man puts on a dress and gets his sexual kicks, he is a transvestite. When a man is a woman trapped in a man's body and has the little operation, he is a transsexual.
I know that.
When a gay man has way too much fashion sense for one gender, he is a drag queen.
Thank you.
And when a tired little Latin boy puts on a dress, he is simply a boy in a dress.
I'm just a boy in a dress.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and John Leguizamo in To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. I am not going to confirm or deny whether I was quoting along with that movie as the clip was playing, but you can...
They call that lip syncing, and you were doing an excellent job of it.
Well, I am among friends. Bianca Del Rio, let me start with you.
Sure.
What is a drag queen exactly? Is that an apt definition, or is there more to it? How would you describe it?
I think in the big spectrum of things, I would say it's definitely pretty accurate. I mean, for me in particular, I consider myself, you know, a clown even. There's nothing, I don't necessarily consider myself a woman. I don't want to be a female. So I think it's a good, you know, for me, I'm an actor, and it's just basically the packaging to get away with murder, especially with the type of material that I do or the comedic stuff that I deal with. I think it's important to, you know, dress up and make it fun for people, because when I don't wear it, they say that I'm just a nasty homosexual, and then I wear the wig and they go hysterical. So it's kind of like the packaging to get away with murder for me. So I would say yes, in my world, I do believe that that is a pretty accurate, but most people think of it all as one thing, but I think that's pretty accurate.
I do hear you, Bianca, in terms of the it's interesting that you described it as clowning in terms of a kind of a garb that allows you to be what I think other people would find otherwise socially unacceptable, but it makes it more playful in a way. Lena Lett, what about you? What is a drag queen in your view?
Well, it is all of those things and more. To each, I believe, to each drag queen is their own definition, because it's so much an expression of your own creativity, as well as Bianca said, an opportunity to get away with murder. You know, we make fun of people and they come up and thank you afterwards. What other career allows you that opportunity?
There are very few.
So, you know, we also push the boundaries of all sorts of things. If I can be up on stage and they see me with my hair that's higher than the Lord, I'll say on
closer to the Lord.
Closer to the Lord.
Right.
And makeup that is a bit much, then, you know, it gives them a little bit of courage to go out and live their life and try to be a little bit more authentic in who they are. If this person can do that, what can I do? Kind of thing.
Brigitte, how do you define it? What is a drag queen to you?
Well, they already stole all the good answers, so I don't have anything original to say.
Well, and that's very drag-like.
Yes.
Well, then let me ask you, Brigitte. As I understand it, you're a little bit newer to drag. You're kind of an up-and-comer in Atlanta and in the South. Can you give us a sense of the different kinds of drag that you see where you are? There are many different styles, as we've already kind of expressed, but what do you see? What's the diversity of drag look like where you are?
Well, we joke in Atlanta that there's 45,000 drag shows with the same five people in all of them. So so much diversity. But I mean, I'm happy to be a queen in Atlanta because of all the people and the trailblazers that came out of here. But I think, again, like everything's so global now that we're exposed to all the same things. We're looking at all the same pictures and references and social media. So that I think I take my influences from everywhere. But Atlanta is definitely the place where I can test out my own ideas or be the queen that I want to be. But yeah, there's really everything everywhere, as general as that sounds.
Atlanta also the place where RuPaul kind of found a voice and began to develop a persona. Does the presence of RuPaul still kind of loom large in Atlanta, Brigitte, or are there other voices that are also up and coming, that are also noted?
Yeah, I mean, everybody loves RuPaul, of course, but people come up to me and they're like, oh, we used to see RuPaul go down the street in his roller skates, and I'm like, I love hearing all those stories about that, but I think there's also a lot of, you know, New York City RuPaul that we look up to, and then Hollywood RuPaul, so yeah, it's amazing that he came out of Atlanta, Georgia in terms of, like, when he was first blowing up, but it's not like we go pray at the RuPaul shrine every Sunday just right. to keep drag alive.
No, it's in our contract for us to do that. It's not
yeah,
for you.
That's, yeah. One day for me, maybe.
We're contracted to do it. No.
I believe. We are speaking, we are having one of the most fabulous conversations we have ever had on 1A. Bianca Del Rio, how did you get into drag?
It wasn't a conscious choice. I had worked in theater for quite some years, and I'd done costumes, wigs, and makeup. So I kind of had all of the packaging to do drag. And through it, I was a yes person. I said yes to everything that came my way. So it was a question of, you know, do you want to be in this play? And there was a play, it's called Pageant, and it deals with six men that are in a fictitious beauty pageant for this glamorous company. And they needed someone to fill a role. And I said, sure, why not? I'm there. And it kind of snowballed into my career. As I said before, with it was just like, sure, let me try this for like 6 weeks of the run of the show. And during that time, the owner of the local gay club had come in and seen me and said, would you like to do a guest spot? And I'm like, sure, why not? So it just kind of snowballed. And then I ended up doing like 5 days a week in a bar for 10 years in New Orleans before I moved to New York. So it was never that I sat down and said, this is what I want to do. It just kind of evolved into it. And then it just kind of became, you know, my career. And as far as like insult comedy, that just kind of stirred from doing those shows where you're there on a Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock in the evening hosting bingo when no one actually cares what you're doing. So through it is kind of where your skill set comes in. You know, they've got people that are there to drink for happy hour, and you're trying to call out bingo balls. So you can imagine that experience for 10 years, what that was like. So right. I think that's where my style came from, was out of those moments. But it truly was just this weird thing, and now it's 23 years later, which is insane.
I would love to ask Brigitte and Lena the same question, but Bianca, I also would like a sense of the transformation you feel when you go from, you know, Clark Kent to Superman and then get on stage. What goes through your head? What goes through your heart when you see yourself in drag versus in everyday wear? Or is it to the point where it just kind of feels like work clothes, like a costume?
Oh, completely. For me, it's completely work clothes. I mean, if anything, I feel uncomfortable, which is what makes my charming personality. But I think it just stems from, you know, I paint by number. You do what you got to do. And there are people that do take, you know, do have a different process. I have friends of mine that take 3 hours to get ready. I mean, I can get ready in an hour because I don't blend. I just put an eyelash on anything that's not blended. And you just go. I think that there are people that have a different process and people that feel, you know, once again, as they were saying before, everybody does drag for different reasons. But for me, it's literally you do what you got to do. You put on your little, you know, costume and you roll with the punches. So the process for me, I kind of sit back and think, wow, this is amazing. And of course, with each thing that you get to do, you're like, wow, I'm in Amsterdam about to do a show and I'm in drag. Like that kind of stuff blows my mind. But I try not to let that get into my head. I just go, it's a job. Do what you have to do. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. Hopefully they'll enjoy it.
Lena, let me finish with you, and then Brigitte, I'd like to know more about your drag origin story. Lena, how did you get into drag?
I had just left seminary, and a good friend of mine said, let's go to a show, because I was very depressed.
Pause. You have to back up to the first clause of the first sentence of that story. You had just left where?
Seminary. That's where people go to study.
I know what a seminary. I know what a seminary is.
Oh, you look very vexed,
Lena,
at the moment.
But so you left seminary. What sort of a seminary were you?
It was the North American College in Rome, Italy.
Okay. So it's a Catholic seminary?
Yes.
Okay. So just left seminary on a path to be a Catholic priest.
And I was very depressed. And a friend of mine said, you need cheering up. Let's go. And so they took me to a club called Ziegfeld's here in Washington. And I watched these beautiful monstrosities come out. And they were just letting the children have it. And I thought, wow, that is amazing. I want to do that. And so my friend, who ended up being my drag mother, said, there's an amateur contest coming up. I'll paint you. You go, you just do you.
Drag mother?
Yes, someone who fosters you and helps you learn how to do makeup and hair and that sort of, although I never did figure that one out, but the makeup part was okay. Hair to me is still a mystery. But yeah, who gives you some jewelry, pushes you along, that sort of thing, get you set. So I did the contest and I won, and that's history.
How did you feel about getting on the path to doing drag when you had just graduated from seminary and were on a path to work in the priesthood? That must have been a big decision.
It is a big decision, but you know, if you boil it down to nuts and bolts, it's the way I think of it is it's similar to this. Drag and the priesthood are supposed to take people where they are, and they're supposed to raise them up. They're supposed to elevate them a little bit. You give them a little bit of humor for an hour of their life so they can forget their troubles outside. Now, the alcohol helps, don't get me wrong, but you pick them up and you raise them up just a little bit, and that's the purpose of all of this. I mean, I don't think anybody of us would be doing this if people weren't entertained and they weren't happy and, you know, you didn't take them out of their regular lives.
Brigitte Bidet, how did you get into drag?
I just loved what you said about us being priestesses, though. Thank you for saying that. I had just finished going to school for dance, so I was, you know, a nice little starving artist, and I would go out to the clubs and watch the drag shows, but when I was, like, on the dance floor dancing, I felt super feminine, like, with the way I wanted to move, and I was like, how can I make that not feel so uncomfortable for me? And then I watched all these queens and I, you know, arrogantly thought I would do a better job than them. But that motivated me to get into it. And then there was this drag queen in town that was also getting started. Her name is Violet Tchotchke. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. But she got me to compete in this newcomers contest. And yeah, we just both inspired each other to get more into drag, and she, you know, knew exactly who she was and blew up, and it's super inspiring, and I guess my learning curve is a little more gradual.
I'm sorry, how many years ago was this, did you say?
This was 6 years ago.
Would you describe the transformation you see or feel when you get into drag? What's that like for you?
Yeah, I like to take my time. You know, if I have to get ready in an hour, I can do that. But my drag is super feminine. You should Google me. I'm really pretty. But so I like to just, once it's done is when I feel the complete transformation. Because the whole process, I don't know if you've watched someone get ready before, it's kind of rough. And then by the time they dust everything off, put the lash on the lip, it's absolutely gorgeous. So me, I have to be, like, at the gig, like, talking to people to really feel like Brigitte. She doesn't really exist in a vacuum as much as I wish she could.
So it's not just the look. It's also the energy of the interaction. It's the conversation. It's the whole persona.
Yeah, the experience. I mean, some days it's about, like, I want to, you know, feel gorgeous. Some days it's, like, I want to be a clown. You know, I want to – some days it's more about, like, you know, your performance. I don't know. I like to, like, have new experiences with it so it doesn't get boring and keeps exciting me.
Let's get to a few of your questions for Bianca, Brigitte, and Lena. Irvin in Arkansas asked, do drag queens prefer to keep their real personas under wraps, no pun intended, similar to pro wrestlers? Lena, how would you answer Irvin?
No. You know, my Facebook page says David Lett, and then I post all my Lena photos there. I don't care if you know who I am. It's a part of my personality.
Did you have to get to that point, or were you always that way?
I'm always that way. It's just, if this is who I am, this is who I am. You either like it or you don't.
See, I think that amazes some people, because I think for people who aren't as familiar with drag and female impersonation and so forth and that kind of gender bending, it just feels dangerous to commingle those two aspects of your lives, depending on where you live or what industry you're in or what circles you run in. It can just feel risky.
Honey, if they don't like you, they're not going to like you anyway. It's just that simple. Why waste the time? If they love you, they're going to love you no matter what.
Bianca, what about you? How would you answer Irvin's question?
Well, I think after doing Drag Race in particular, it did shift things for me because people saw you on national television out of drag, whereas before, when I was around, nobody even cared. So once you get this little taste of reality television or heightened moment globally, it's quite shocking to find people that will come up to you and talk to you. And I forget, because I think I had done drag for so many years before that where no one cared, that it is a little off-putting, but it doesn't bother me in the least. I mean, I am what I am. So, like, you know, like Lena says, I can't really change any of that. And as far as I never feel threatened or crazed by putting something on Facebook, because in the end, have you seen the stuff people put out there? They're far worse than a drag queen. So I sit back and kind of, you know, welcome it. I mean, what's to hide at this point?
Well, and honestly, Bianca, I don't know if you, I have always gotten the impression from the drag queens that I've been around and drag kings as well, that people tend to regard drag queens with a fair amount of respect. Like if you have the wherewithal and the guts to build a persona, to get in drag and to go out publicly and to just let it all hang out, you are probably not someone to be trifled with. I have really rarely ever seen somebody mess with a drag queen publicly. And if they did, they regretted it every single time.
Yeah, well, I do feel, I mean, I find I'm kind of in between on that one, because I remember early years, and maybe Lena can jump in on this too, is that before it was almost in the gay community in particular, it was looked at as a bad thing to be a drag queen. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a lot of the popular gays or the masculine gays or the gym gays that would come out were not interested. And this is pre-social media. This is pre-Drag Race. This is pre all the excitement that the world has now for drag, like it's a new discovery. It was interesting to see how people treat it. And then once there's this ounce of fame with anything, I mean, there's a reason why people in the world like Kim Kardashian and Snooki are famous. It's not because of, you know, that their talents by any means, but it is fascinating how that has kind of shifted, I feel. And it's also kind of been a little awkward for other queens that haven't done Drag Race, because they'll tell someone that's been working for 20 years, you really should go on the show. And it's like, listen, if you've been working for 20 years, you've got a great life, you're doing what you're doing. If you wanted to do it, you could do it, but that's not the end-all be-all of everything.
Right.
Am I right, Lena?
You're exactly right. We call them the khaki gays, because they wear the khaki pants and the button-down shirt, and they don't, you know, they want everybody to think that they've assimilated. And
of course.
Honey, we're about diversity, and they're the ones that always would chastise or criticize, oh no, not another drag queen.
I remember that vividly, and it's one of those things now where they're the first ones to run up to me and ask for a selfie.
Exactly.
Times are changing. Times are changing.
Brigitte, I wonder if you could get to this email question. The listener writes, what role does money play in drag? It seems the outfits can be so expensive, especially considering so many drag queens make them themselves. To what extent do one's personal economic resources affect a queen's perceived success in drag? Brigitte?
Well, thank you for asking. I think you just have to be smart. I have had a similar kind of progression with my career, too, where I just kept saying yes to things and getting paid a little bit more money each time and connecting with people so that they tip me more. And I'm just super frugal about what I want to spend my money on. Like, I'd rather buy a nice lace front wig and then thrift the next three costumes and just glue sequins or sequin trim or fringe. You know what I mean? Just like decorate something that's already in place rather than, I've seen queens blow thousands of dollars on one outfit, which is like, it's amazing. Yay, art. I get it. Whatever. But girl, you got to be sustainable. Okay. You want to keep it going. So, I mean, sure, like blow your money on a pair of shoes, but also like try to invest that if you want to keep it going and make it work for you. Like, you can look good without being broke, I guess. Or you can be broke and look good.
Right. So. Lena?
Well, there are particular drag queens that are what we call pageant queens that run for Miss America, Miss Gay America, or Miss US of A or US of A at large. And they'll spend thousands of dollars on gowns. Now, they win a pretty penny if they win, but... You know, that's very rare. I mean, somebody wins every year, obviously, but there's a big group.
It's a competition.
Yeah,
right.
It's a competition. Right. There's a big group
of
them.
Do they?
Yeah, I hope.
Do they really win?
they win something, I think. They win bookings, if nothing else. You know, it can be expensive, but at the same time, you make do with what you've got, if that's all you've got. And if you're good, which I think... a lot of girls are, you get more bookings, and the more bookings you get, the more cash you get, and that... goes further.
Bianca, what about you? I wonder how the economics of...
Oh, she's loaded.
I am not drinking.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, is how your economics changed in terms of being a drag queen before and after Drag Race.
Well, first of all, everybody just assumes because you go on this reality show and you win $100,000, they fail to realize that $52,000 goes to taxes.
Right.
So that's that. Aside from it, I also, once again, was a yes person, and I took every gig after Drag Race, even much to, you know, at the time my management's, you know, didn't think it was the best idea. I still went out and did everything, whether it was no money or a lot of money or a lot of events or a lot of prides. And you do that. And I think for me, I've come to terms with the fact that this is a golden ticket. I'm now a 43-year-old man that, you know, I've worked in a bar where I got paid $50. I worked in a place where no one would show up. And all of that has paid off in the end for me for this. So I do realize that this is a great time to work, but I also know I have to work harder than ever. As far as spending money, I look at it objectively. What's going to make the most sense? I mean, I'm not known to be a glamour puss. I'm not known to spend thousands of dollars on shoes because my dress is a proper length. You don't see my shoes. So I think it's everybody spends things on different. I think if this would have happened to me at 20, I might have a different answer for you. But happening later in life, I'm too cheap to blow money. But it does cost.
Right.
I mean, the maintenance alone costs. And you also, the cost of not necessarily having a life. I mean, you're on the road constantly,
right,
which
right.
is a great thing. I'm not complaining. If I complained, I'd really sound horrible. But it's, you kind of forfeit that. So you don't get to go necessarily hang out with your friends or take that dream vacation because you're usually, hopefully, booked.
Right.
So really, I that's where I am with it. You know, you obviously spend money on things that matter.
We did hear from many of you who are fans of RuPaul's Drag Race. Here are some of the messages you left in our inbox.
My name is Courtney. I'm calling from Columbia, South Carolina. My 14-year-old son actually got me watching RuPaul's Drag Race and then Dragula. And we love to just sit down and watch together. I want to mention that I love how today's generation seems so open.
Hi, my name is Leilita. I'm calling from West New York, New Jersey. I have been watching RuPaul Drag Race for over 3 years now, and I really enjoy it. I used to be close-minded, and my daughter introduced me to the show. I really enjoy it, and I look forward to seeing it every week.
My name is Elizabeth, and I'm from Tulsa. I'm not a drag queen, but I have a funny story. My husband, who is in his 50s and an avid race car fan, happened to be scanning the TV channels and found a drag race show, he thought. It even had the drag race checkered flags in the logo. So he turned it on, and it was RuPaul's Drag Race. He sputtered and was a little... surprised, but after that, the whole family became fans of RuPaul's Drag Race. We're really glad that he found it.
Thank you so much for sharing your stories. I wanted to be there the day that he tuned in what he thought was going to be a drag race.
That is amazing.
And
that
found it was not a drag race at all.
What a disappointment.
It was something much more fat. Well, maybe a disappointment, but certainly it's to the point of all the callers, it's changed the way people think about drag, which is something that Rory emailed us about. Rory asked, how has Drag Race changed drag? Drag has changed. What do you wish would stop or come back? The impact on drag of Drag Race. Let me start with Lena. Bianca, I definitely want to hear from you on this, but Lena, how has Drag Race changed things?
Well, it's made it more mainstream, obviously, and it's people who were afraid of it before and maybe people who never thought about it before now have some sort of interest in it and some sort of fascination with it. That can be good and bad. The only, and I mentioned this to your producer, that she asked me what I thought about the evolution of all of these things, is that sometimes people don't realize is that, you know, drag queens were instrumental in Stonewall. That was the beginning. We need to sort of remember our roots, particularly if you're going to be a drag queen, and expand upon that. Take it as a little bit teachable moment. I feel like Oprah right now. Take it like a teachable moment.
No, but it's a good point, because I think it was Bianca who mentioned how drag queens weren't always very much welcomed in the gay community, and yet
now,
it was drag queens and leathermen and rent boys and others who were at the Stonewall Inn who rebelled against the NYPD.
What was Rent Men? I don't remember.
Rent
that.
Boys.
Oh, Rent Boys. Sorry.
Yes. That's another conversation for off the air.
Altogether.
But the point is that they were instrumental in the movement, to your point.
Yes.
Brigitte, how would you answer Rory's question? How has Drag Race changed drag?
Well, I mean, I feel a bit like, you know, because I'm so young and everything, but that I'm still in a place of learning and listening to people who did it like before it was cool, and like did it because that was their form of expression and their way of lifting up the community. Like, I get to work with some queens. Actually, one of them's name is Lena Lust, which I thought was you when I heard the name said earlier, but she started dragging like 1977. Where they still used to have 3 articles of men's clothing on, or they had to use like their male name as a stage name because it was like illegal to even do it. So, yay for visibility and all that. But I really want to learn more from the people who did it before me and what they experienced.
Bianca, I'd love you to answer Rory's question about how Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race, has changed drag. What's your perspective?
Well, I think there's good and bad with all of it. I think that out of it, obviously, there's a lot of queens who've had amazing careers, and also the visibility of drag being out there, people not being so afraid of it, people actually watching it. I get to travel the world with my stage show, and what's been interesting is the majority of the audience is straight, which back in my day, you would have to go to a gay bar, or go to a gay event to find a drag queen anywhere. I think that's great. I think that the downfall is that, sadly, a lot of the people that watch the show just don't necessarily know gay culture or drag history, and therefore just assume everything is created by that show, which we live in a world now with, you know, social media and Google. You can just push a button and find out anything. But it's also amazing how many people don't know anything else. So I always think it's important to do research, as we've all said before. And I also think that to sit back and talk with somebody and find out what's going on. You're not an expert because you watched 3 episodes, but on social media, they definitely feel that they do. So I've had to come to the point where, you know, it's opened the floodgates because I didn't have the social media level before the show, that I'm now stuck with people telling me what they think of me, what they think is important, what they don't like, what they do like. And I mean, luckily I'm an old man and I'm aware that I don't need to get critiques from a 13-year-old girl in Phoenix, Arizona, but it doesn't bring me to the point of being upset about it. I kind of go, oh, girl, 99% of the stuff they write, they would never say to your face. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been the downfall, but it's all doable in the end, you know?
Before I bring on our next guest, I should just credit, we got a direct response to something you said, Lena. Theodore, listening in Cleveland, tweeted in all caps, "Khaki gaze was just spoken on 1A. God bless America." You are making some serious fans. We bet we're going to make a few more fans of our next guest for another perspective. We've been talking a lot about drag queens, but there is such a thing as a drag king. And joining us now in studio is King Pretty Ricky, a drag king based here in Washington and the co-producer of Pretty Boy Drag, a drag king troupe. Pretty Ricky, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
What is a drag king?
So if I was to kind of make it a simplistic explanation, it is a female-bodied person who performs masculinity in some way, shape, or form.
It's kind of the converse of a drag queen.
Yes, absolutely.
How did you get into being a drag king? What was your first encounter?
I
should ask, first of all, how long have you been in the drag king scene?
So about 5 years at this point, and I've been producing for about 3 of those 5.
How'd you get into it?
Kind of similar story to Lena, where it, like, kind of depression led me into drag. I guess that's kind of where you go when you're queer. I had just gotten out of a bad relationship, and a friend of mine took me to a drag show, a drag king show. I had never heard of a drag king before. To be quite frank, I thought it was a little weird, and I was like, I don't understand this. And then I saw it on stage, and I was like, I want to do this. And my first show, I had a lot of support from, you know, my brother and his wife, and you know, friends, and I had just made some new friends in the community, and one of them ended up being my wife after seeing me perform on stage. So, drag brought me a lot of confidence. It helped me find a home that I didn't know that I didn't have.
Elaborate on that. A home?
I feel very at home in the drag king community. We are, well, I grew up in a very straight-laced suburb, and expressing ourselves like this was, you know, not something that I'd heard of, especially when you grow up as a, you know, your mother's little girl. I was forced to carry purses and wear dresses and wear girls' clothes, and I always felt uncomfortable. And in this community, this drag king community, I was allowed to express myself how I wanted to express myself, how I felt comfortable. And not only was it, not only is it accepted, right, but there's a step beyond that where it's celebrated, right? They celebrate you finding yourself and finding your home and support you and push you along in your drag career.
We got a voicemail from someone in our audience who is a drag king. Here is what they left in our inbox.
My name is Ashley. A lot of the stigma around doing drag, personally being a drag king, is that people think that you're either gay or lesbian or bisexual. Personally, I am asexual, and I do it simply because it's fun and it gives me a sense of who I am.
Ashley, I appreciate you calling in and helping to kind of broaden our perspective of the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity and gender expression. It's one of those areas, Pretty Ricky, where there's room for, in drag queens and drag kings, to kind of express whatever you are as opposed to trying to make this mold fit around you.
Absolutely. And I will say this, and I hope I don't make enemies out there. I do think the drag king community is a little bit more accepting of that. I know that RuPaul has said that she would never have a trans drag queen on her show. And we accept literally everyone in the drag king community, whether you identify as queer or whether you identify as straight or somewhere in between. There's an acceptance within the king community that I wish the queen community had a little bit more of.
Yeah, I do believe, though, Bianca, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there was eventually a trans competitor on Drag Race. Am I mistaken?
Well, there have been several that have been on the show. I don't know if they were necessarily transitioning before the show or transitioning directly after the show. And I think that's where the controversy lies.
Yes.
Because Rue had done an interview recently, which basically was questioned about having trans visibility on the show. And is it open to drag kings and cis women performing in drag as well? And, I mean, it was this explosive interview, and he had made some comments that I think kind of put everybody into a place where they were unsure of what was going on, because there have been a few, at least three that I know of offhand, that were on the show, and I'm not exactly sure of what they considered transitioning, whether it was partial transitioning before or transitioning while it was happening or transitions after, which I think is where Rue kind of got into a sticky situation.
Right.
So that, I don't know. But there have been contestants, yes.
Oh, by the way, I should, just by way of definition, Bianca referred to a cis woman. That's cisgender, cisgender. A person is cisgender if their sex at birth and their gender identity today match. I was born male and I identify as a man, so I am a cisgender man. Just to clarify that term. Our producers went out into D.C. to meet some local drag artists this past weekend and asked them what drag has meant to them. And we spoke to a local drag king who's in your troupe named Phoenix King. Here's part of what Phoenix King had to say.
First and foremost, drag helped me realize that I was trans. So that was really big. And I remember just being like, oh man, like I really like the way I look with a mustache. And then it was just kind of like, oh, I want this to be real. And like, it just kind of developed from there. So it was just like, I don't know, it just opened up a world for me. It just changed my life. And it like made things make so much more sense.
I wonder how you react to what Phoenix King had to say. It sounds like the realization or the transformation that all kinds of people go through in drag is very personal and very powerful.
Absolutely. That's my little, I call him my little osito. That's teddy bear in Spanish. I know a few drag kings who got into being a king to kind of figure out, you know, am I trans? You know, where do I fall on the spectrum? What is my gender identity? And it has helped so many people that I know kind of figure that out, because you get to perform that on stage. And when it feels really good, when it feels right, I think that's when that transformation starts for people. As performers, whether they, you know, where they are on that spectrum.
Let's see if we can get through a few more questions before we have to go. Anne in Denver asked, who are some of your favorite drag kings? What do you think it will take for them to get more visibility in the drag culture?
I'm going to be hard H honest here. Pretty Boy Drag, my favorite drag kings.
Your crew.
My crew. 100%. Because we approach drag kinging, from what I've seen, a slightly different way. You know, I think drag queens especially approach it from a very comedic standpoint. And we do something a little different, where we're giving a service to people, right? Who's our audience? And our audience tends to be queer women. What do queer women want to see? And it's not that they don't want to see comedic, silly drag kings up there, but we also present something much more serious. We have a show that we call After Dark. That's our like Magic Mike show. It's perfect for bachelorette parties.
A little sexier.
It's very sexy. It's very serious. It gets very naked in there within DC law. I just want to.
Right.
Within the confines of the law.
Just clear that up.
Yes. Right. Yes, absolutely. And we approach drag that way. We approach it like a business. What does our audience want? What will they tip more for? You know, my wife and myself have been producing Pretty Boy Drag for 3 years and or almost 3 years. And we take it so seriously that when our performers get tipped, we actually kind of keep track of that and figure out what did the audience respond to, and how can we give them more of that? So if one particular act got less than the others, well, what about this particular act didn't they like? And then we analyze it. We talk about it with our performers.
Let's get in a few more questions about drag queens and kings before our time is up. Arlene wrote us on Facebook, why is this not considered a sexist stereotype, meaning drag queens? Why is this not considered a sexist stereotype of women? I mean, when white people wear blackface makeup, it is considered racist. Why isn't this considered sexist? Quite a few of you asked questions along that line. Lady Bunny, who is a legendary drag queen, was part of an HBO documentary series called The Outlist. And Lady Bunny addressed this and tried to set the record straight.
I never understand why feminists have a problem with drag queens. There are some things that drag queens do, like rub imaginary boobs or portray, as I guess I do, a tacky woman. The thing is, I'm not trying to be a woman. I'm using women's clothing in rather large sizes to express who I think I am. That has nothing to do with the woman. This is about me and how I want to dress.
Legendary drag queen Lady Bunny speaking on the HBO documentary The Outlist. Lena Lett, how would you respond to Arlene's question?
Well, with all sensitivity, I don't think it's a stereotype at all. Find me a woman that puts on that amount of makeup, that amount of hair, wears hose and tights and heels and nails and jewelry and perfume all in one sitting, and then that's a stereotype.
Right.
So I think Arlene is just missing the point a little.
Amy Bain is listening from Centerville, Virginia. Amy asks, can your guests please address racism within the drag community? Many of the drag race people of color queens have been victims of some vicious racist attacks. Also, what do your guests think of the influx of young hetero female fans? Is there a feeling of a loss of safe space? Pretty Ricky, if you could hold on for 1 second, let me give Bianca briefly a chance to respond to Amy's first question about racism in drag, especially on Drag Race, briefly.
Well, I think as the show has gotten more popular, I mean, we are experiencing that in the world now because of social media. I think social media has put a lot of negativity out there, which is unnecessary, but I'm not exactly sure as to why it's happening. I mean, a majority of the girls that are my friend are of a different race from the show, some of my closest friends that I knew before the show that went on the show. So I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but it is quite interesting just to see how people react to certain individuals. And sadly, with television in particular, you know, people have this idea of what they see on television and is exactly what you are as a person. Mm-hmm. And that can be a little confusing as well. So when they get crazy with the death threats and the nasty comments, that I truly don't understand, because you're watching a story being told on television. It's not necessarily real life. And it's sad that that's where people form their opinions.
Pretty Ricky?
So I'm going to disagree. Racism exists in all facets of life, right? So why would it be any different within the queer community? Racism does not suddenly disappear within the queer community at all. I know for there's recently been some hubbub about a club in Atlanta where all of the drag queens quit because the owner said something extremely racist. And I know we have one of the guests is from Atlanta.
Yeah. Brigitte, do you know anything about that before we got to go?
Yeah, that was me and my friends, actually.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I agree. What you're saying is exactly true. It's like you need to unpack the larger issue.
Yes.
Is that why is like a skinny white person put on a pedestal higher than someone equally or more talented than them? I mean, we weren't addressing that same situation at Burkhart's where I worked. But yeah, we found out the owner made some pretty horrific comments, and there were about 30 entertainers that worked there, and we all quit at the same time.
Wow.
Which meant a lot to a lot of different people, and the bar ended up having to close down because of what we did.
One last question to all of you. If there's someone here listening who is curious about drag or interested in getting into it, one best piece of advice, something you wish you'd known, you'd wish you'd thought of, just your best 5-second piece of advice for somebody who wishes that they who wants to try this but isn't exactly sure how to start, what to do, what not to do. Bianca, your one best piece of advice, briefly.
Don't do it. It's a trap. I'm kidding. Have fun. Have fun. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. Lena?
Just do it. If you think you want to, just do it. Just try it. Just find somebody who else is in the group and just do it.
Brigitte?
Nobody really cares, so just do whatever you want. I think that's a Dr. Seuss quote.
And Pretty Ricky, briefly?
I'm going to echo what everybody else said. Do it. Just do it. Give it a try.
King Pretty Ricky, co-producer of Pretty Boy Drag, Lena Lett, drag hostess of shows at Town Boutique in D.C., Bianca Del Rio, author of Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, and Brigitte Bidet, host in Atlanta of the drag show Toss Salad. Thank you all for being with us. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.